Okay, we're in a message series called Believe, and today's topic is on the topic of compassion. And so I'm asking, who cares? And here's our key idea today. The key idea is this. I believe that God calls all Christians to show compassion to people in need. And I have an idea that most of you here would agree with that statement. You would agree with the statement, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Back in the 1990s, there was a company based out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, that engaged in an advertising campaign funded by an anonymous donor. And this advertising campaign, many of you remember it, was called Messages from God. And various billboards would be set up around the nation with messages from God. Maybe you remember some of these. What part of thou shalt not didn't you understand? God. Loved the wedding, invite me to the marriage. God. Big Bang Theory, you've got to be kidding. God. Have you read my number one bestseller? There will be a test. God. And then this one, that love thy neighbor thing, I'm in it. God. That love thy neighbor thing, showing compassion, doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. What's compassion? It's more than just feeling it. It's feeling it and acting appropriately. You know, recently with Hurricane Harvey, we saw just one expression of compassion after another. Don't we have some photos to be put up here on the screen? Just one expression of compassion after another, where people were helping. And it's a beautiful thing. It's an inspirational thing. Well, let's talk about compassion. I've got basically three questions I want to ask this morning. Here's the first one. Can you handle compassion fatigue? Maybe you've heard of the little phrase compassion fatigue before. Maybe you haven't. It's basically you're tired of caring. You're just tired of caring. And it can happen to all of us because we live in such a flat world. You can get up this morning, turn on your phone, and you're hearing about disasters, natural and otherwise, on so many different places. And it's like, I'm just overwhelmed. And no matter what I do, no matter how much I give, it just feels like I'm not making a dent in anything. So I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to stop caring. It's not making any difference. There's so much evil, so many problems in the world. I'm just going to cocoon and have fun. That's what I'm going to do because I am tired of caring. Here's what I would encourage you to do. Yes, the needs are beyond your own ability, but quite honestly, that's one of the beauties of church. Where we get to pool our resources and do things in Nepal, for example, and in other places that individually we couldn't do, but there's a congealing of our efforts. But never let the good you cannot do thwart the good you can do. Never let the grand needs that you cannot meet them all, never let the good you cannot do thwart the good that you can do. Light your own candle in that corner of darkness and do for the one, do for the two, do for the few what you wish you could do for everybody if you had unlimited time and resources, but you don't have unlimited time and resources. But for some of you, you are uniquely positioned to experience compassion fatigue because there's someone in your life up close and personal. It's a child, it's a parent, it's a relative, and you are the primary caregiver. Or your job is to be a caregiver. And there are times, even though you love that person, you love that child, you love that parent, you love that grandparent, it's like, I'm just sick and tired of caring. And you think there's something wrong with you. If I were a better person, if I were more godly, I wouldn't be. How can I be tired of caring for this person I love? Listen, here's what I want to say to you. Don't beat yourself up. That's very normal. It's very natural. And my exhortation to you is be aware that compassion fatigue is real. talk to someone about it. There are resources, there are coping skills out there that can help you, because you need to engage in some soul care. One of the best things you can do for yourself is to show some compassion to yourself. So, first of all, just can you handle compassion fatigue? I believe you can. But also, a second question is this, and that is, can you be compassionate without a compassion fungus? And one fungus is maybe not realizing and validating that compassion might take many different forms. And that leads to my second point. Do you know that compassion takes many different forms? For example, just think of Hurricane Harvey and all the different ways that compassion has been demonstrated. For some people, they were showing compassion through their physical skilled labor. Hammers and nails and tools and there, and that is fantastic. That is wonderful. For other people, they were showing compassion because they gave some thought to what they could give, and they sacrificed some money for hurricane relief. Some used their administrative skills or their fundraising skills. You know, I know of at least one stay-at-home mom in our church, and I think there were others. You remember, because of Hurricane Harvey, the starting of school was delayed a week. And so one stay-at-home mom, what she did, she went into her neighborhood to some families she knew, and she said, I know that both of you work, and, you know, and you've got young children who won't be in school next week, so why don't you let me take care of your children next week? And they said, well, you know, we leave at 6:30 a.m. We're not back to 6:30 p.m. That's fine. You drop your children off at 6:30 a.m., you pick them up at 6:30 p.m., and I will watch your children every day this week. That's compassion. It's feeling it, but it's doing something about it as well. And compassion, it takes many different forms. And for example, sometimes compassion is very, very public. We might do something together and, you know, you take some photos and you Instagram it or you Facebook it, and it's public, and that's wonderful. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes it's private, where you show compassion and you don't take a photo of it. You don't Instagram it. Well, if it's not on Instagram, did it really happen? Yes, it did. And it's private compassion. And as Jesus would say, the right hand never knew what the left hand was doing. And then sometimes compassion is confidential. It's where you are engaged and involved in another person's life, and you're going out of your way for that person. It might be a conversation, it might be assistance, whatever it might be, and you intentionally and deliberately say nothing about it. It's in the vault. It's just between you and that person, and it's confidential. Sometimes it's public. Sometimes it's private. Sometimes it's confidential. But it takes many different forms. Do you know also that compassion, it is more than a feeling? It is more than a feeling. Throughout the Gospels, you'll see this little phrase describing Jesus. Jesus was moved with compassion. Notice the action word. And then our key scripture for the morning from Psalm 82, defend the weak and the fatherless. Again, notice the verbs. Uphold the cause of the poor and the oppressed. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. The virtue of compassion is sympathizing in the right way for the right things and doing the right thing about it. Do you know that compassion is more than a feeling? Do you know also that compassion might have its cheap counterfeits? Its cheap counterfeits. Like how? Well, sometimes you may think you're helping a situation when in reality, not so much. One Catholic priest by the name of George Morelli talks about the need to discern the real need. And he talks about how in his own life, he has for years volunteered with spinal cord injury patients in VA hospitals. And he says, and I quote, Hospital staff and visitors were instructed never to do anything for a paralyzed veteran that they could do for themselves unless you were specifically asked to do so and you had determined this paralyzed veteran could not perform the task. And he said, that was difficult for me because I was brought up to be helpful. I was brought up that if somebody were walking through a door, you open the door for them. Could they open the door themselves? Sure, but you know, just being nice. Or if someone dropped something, so they dropped a pencil, I was just brought up, well, you know, I'll pick it up for you. But I was taught and trained that if I were going to help these veterans, it was for their good that they learned to maximize their own self-sufficiency. Sometimes it's false compassion when you step in and you think you're helping, but you're really enabling or rescuing. Sometimes false compassion shows up where you're taking somebody's side in a conflict, and it's really not your business. You've got a friend, and they were the first one to bend your ear, and because they're your friend, you're taking up their cause and their offense. When really the thing you should do is just step back and say, I love you and I care, and I'm going to pray that you'll handle this in a peaceful and healthy way. But you don't get involved. Sometimes false compassion shows up where you approve of things in a friend's life that just aren't right. You sidle up and you say, I love you and I care and just follow your heart and et cetera. And no, you need to be engaged with that person in a way that you care for them to be a strong man of God or a strong woman of God. False compassion would never challenge. False compassion would never call someone to change or to repentance. But real compassion will do that. That leads to this fourth thing, and that is, do you know that soul compassion trumps all? Where one of the most important types of compassion you can display to someone is where you care for their soul and you're pointing them to repentance and faith in Jesus Christ. And you're willing to say, it's good that you're fighting the good fight of faith. It's good that you're putting on the whole armor of God. It's good that you're resisting the evil one and aiming for the high road. Plenty of people will sidle up to you and say, oh, listen, just do what you want to do, and I'm always there, and follow your heart. No. You need to follow Jesus. Follow the call of God in your life. Soul compassion is one of the most important forms of compassion, and too few people are willing to engage in it. And last of all, I'll ask, will you take compassion with you? And let's get real specific. Will you, for example, take compassion to work? You say, Ronnie, work is all about maximizing profits, and compassion really has no place there. Oh, but it does. In fact, one of the best-selling business books of the last few years is called Awakening Compassion at Work. Joanne Jones is a nurse. And she never forgot that during her second year of nursing school, her professor gave her a pop quiz. They breezed through all the questions until the very last question. And that question was, what is the first name of the woman who cleans our classroom? Jones thought it was a joke. She said, I've seen the cleaning woman, but how would I know her name? So she turned in her test paper with that last question left blank. And when the tests were returned a few days later, one student asked, does that last question actually count towards our grade? And the teacher said, absolutely it does. In your careers, you're going to meet many people. And all of them are significant, and everyone deserves your attention and your respect. And treating other people with respect and dignity is part of your job. Joanna Jones said, I never forgot that lesson. And by the way, I learned the name of the cleaning woman. Her name's Dorothy. James Burke was CEO of Johnson & Johnson. Some of you will remember the Tylenol crisis back in 1982 when domestic terrorists put cyanide in Tylenol bottles. James Burke said, I'll tell you how we're going to handle this. We're going to pull every bottle of Tylenol off the shelves. Some of his fellow executives and board members said, you can't do that. Do you know what that's going to cost us? And he said, we have values in this company. One of those values is a high duty, and I quote, to mothers and all others who use our products. And at a cost of $100 million to Johnson & Johnson, he said, we're not putting one child at risk. Somebody said that's one of the bravest acts of a CEO in history. It goes back, though, 3 years prior when he gathered the team together and he said, we operate by values here, not just by profits. And please don't mishear what I'm saying. Businesses have to make a profit to stay in business. God is not against profit. God is not against prosperity. He is against greed and selfishness. And you can take, whether you're the CEO or the cleaning woman, you can take a spirit of compassion to your work and just ask, what would it look like for me to spread a little compassion here? Don't feel like that on Monday morning when you go to work, you have to take a nasty pill. You can take a compassion pill. Secondly, will you take compassion home? Home. Because there is no truer testing ground for compassion than in a marriage. How can you do that? Sometimes it's just tone of voice and volume. Speak with gentleness. Speak without inflammatory language. Act the way you wish you felt. Most marriages don't blow up. Most marriages that end, they don't blow up. They fizzle out. And so often they fizzle out because one or the other feels like you just don't care anymore. And the reason I feel that way is you don't show compassion to what's important to me. So would you take compassion to work? Would you take compassion home? And last of all, would you take compassion to your heart? This is what I mean. You remember that time someone came up to Jesus and asked a question about, Jesus, just who is my neighbor? I know I'm supposed to love my neighbor as myself, so who really is my neighbor? And you remember what Jesus did. He told the story. You know, I think the best short story ever is the story of the prodigal son, and I think the second best short story ever is the story of the Good Samaritan. The man who was walking along the road, he gets beaten to a pulp and left for dead. Ah, but good news, a couple of religious guys come by, and what do? They just pass him by and keep on going. But then another man comes by, and this guy is a Samaritan. And in the culture in which Jesus is telling the story, the word Samaritan was very, very inflammatory. In fact, I'm going to say the word Samaritan, and I want all of you to gasp. You ready? Samaritan. Yeah. That's exactly the reaction of the people when Jesus says, and along came a Samaritan, because this person is viewed as a half-breed heretic. But here's what he does. He stops. He tends to the wounds of the man. He puts that man on his own animal. So now he's walking. And this man is carried by the donkey, and they go to a place of healing. He takes him to an inn, to a hotel. He says, you take care of him. Whatever it costs, I'll cover the bill. I've got to go away for just a bit, but when I come back, whatever is owed, I'll pay for it. Jesus said, that's what it's like to be a neighbor. You don't look at all the things you can't do, but there's a need in front of you, and you respond as you can. Now, here's the way the early church interpreted that story. You are the person who's been beaten and left for dead. That's you. And unless somebody comes and ministers to you, you're not going to make it. A couple of religious folks can come by and listen, rules and regulations, even the rules of God are helpful, but they can't forgive sins and they can't give you spiritual life. But then there comes someone whose name you've taken in vain before, someone that you've viewed as an outcast in your life, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and he comes and he shows mercy to you and he ministers to you and he takes you to a place of safety and he promises to come back. And when he comes back, he says, if there's any other thing you owe, I'll cover it. Is that the primary way we should interpret that parable? I don't know, but I do know this. Jesus Christ is the best friend you'll ever have in your life. Jesus Christ has shown more grace and mercy to you than anyone else. And he looks at us in the church, he looks at us as his followers, and he says, sure, I don't want you to be people, I don't want you to engage in any form of racism or hatred. And I could just give a law to that, but I want to give something even more compelling. I want to give an experience. And let me tell you, good neighborliness flows out of our experience of having received the wonderful, incredible neighborliness of Jesus Christ. We take the compassion we've received from him and we spread it along to others, one day, one life at a time. And for some folks, they think if they can't do something big, it doesn't count. But listen to what Jesus said. Someday you'll stand before me and you'll say, Lord, when did we actually see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? When did we ever see you in prison and visit you, or sick and visit you? And King Jesus will say to you, truly, as you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. Giving food, giving a drink, making a visit, that doesn't sound like something big, but it counts with significant weight in the eyes of God. So, who cares? You do. And you do because God does. Will you take compassion home? Will you take it to work? And will you take it into your own heart and let the love and compassion of God massage you in all of those broken and weary and tired places? Do you know how loved you are? Do you know how cherished you are in the eyes of God? Some of you have never run to God for forgiveness and cleansing and renewal. You can do that today. You know that. If you have faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, you can open your heart to him. You can act on your faith. You can be baptized in his name. And you can know the new life and the cleansing, the washing of rebirth and renewal that's only made possible through the compassion and grace and mercy of God.